You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting show of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Neil Williams. Neil.
What's going on?
Happy July 5th to you.
I know. The day after.
The day after.
Still kind of dead everywhere.
Hey, man. So at least you're not dead.
You know what I'm saying? No. Nobody died. Not this year.
You got to be positive.
Did you blow anything up?
Did I blow anything up? No, but I watched others blow stuff up. So I took the no blow up challenge and had some neighbors came in clutch with some big stuff, and just, man, it's so nice. You know where I live, but I can see Saginaw, downtown, Hewlin, part of Arlington, Haltom City. You know, I can see all these other towns' fireworks going off in the background.
And you're up on an incline quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm up on a hill. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun just watching all the different shows. And then my 20-year-old found some fireworks that he had stashed away now that he's
expired fireworks. Awesome.
And I have a separate Facebook called the Low Budget Show of him shooting off those. And it is low budget, man. It's
nice.
Whew. So, we had a good time. And just kind of stayed at the house, man, just chores. And I don't know, man, that's the beauty of getting older. I think it's just, you know, just the simpler things seem so pleasurable, like sitting outside, like just staring into space. I'm going to be a great old
guy.
That's
what we did. We sat around a grill.
There you go.
With a couple of friends.
Just,
that's it.
Just stay in the moment, man. Just not thinking about the future, not anything. That's good. Hey, I'm going to do a little shameless plug. Now, theoretically, next week we may have a special guest with us that owns a couple of UFC gyms that I've been working with. But here is something. Well, there's glare from the lamp. Let's see if I can do it that way.
No, you can read it still.
Here's the Oliveira versus Chandler fight. And that's a part of the mat from the.
Oh, no, good job.
All right. So I'll get to see Conor McGregor and everybody this week in Vegas. So I'll be flying out to Las Vegas and doing some very shameless story. Well, not that. Don't get excited. Not that shameless, but somewhat shameless posting from the Virgin Hotel, ladies and gentlemen. And Nobu and other interesting places in Vegas. So, and it'll be a lot of fighters, a lot of talent,
a ton of media going on.
Yeah. I sat behind Justin Bieber the last fight. Never knew it.
How tall is that guy,
dude? I never knew it. Not tall.
Oh, he's not. I thought he was.
He's not. Well,
they make him appear to be.
Well, if you think I'm tall, then yes, maybe.
Everyone's tall to me. I'm 5'8".
Whoa, I wasn't going there, man.
It's never bothered me. It didn't bother me when I was a kid. Doesn't bother me now.
Anyway, but
I've always wondered how tall he was because he's skinny.
Yeah,
he's skinny. So it's hard to tell with a skinny dude on TV.
He had the skinny jeans.
Tall or not tall.
Yeah. So, but since this is going to be in Las Vegas, all kinds of people are there. And so I fashion myself as a fairly important person with some of the folks in UFC. So I'll be there for the weigh-ins and I might be able to get on the stage at weigh-in and,
no, yeah?
Yeah, I might be able to. Yeah, I didn't show you that picture of the last fight where I was 203 and 6'1", 203. I actually have a picture of myself at the weigh-in.
That's funny.
Striking a pose like they do. And maybe I'll repost that. I think my children would be embarrassed. Yeah, it was.
It's what they do.
Marginally embarrassing. Yeah. So I'm like, hey, isn't there a party on Friday night that some of the people are going to? And they're like, yeah, but you're not going. Are you kidding me? Like, it's your boy Bruce over here. Like, and they're like, okay, so we went public with Endeavor. We own MGM Grand and these other things. And these guys paid $40,000 a ticket. And Dana's taken 20 of them to dinner. $800,000.
Yeah, man. That's an expensive party.
That's all my league, man. I mean, I'm not paying that for a house or something or
yeah,
a car.
$40,000 for a party? I know. I really don't care who's at the party. I'm not going to that party.
No, man. I mean, I'm a stud.
At $40,000, I'm not going.
I kind of know the venue, but I'm not going to go there and post up and snag people.
After asking and then being told you're not invited if you just show up, it might cause a scene.
Hey, speaking of Nobu in that restaurant, I was at the one in Malibu and had the chance to meet, oh my gosh, he's an Australian guy and he played one of those soldier guys. What's it? Anyway. It'll come to me later on the show, and I'll tell you the rest of the story. What's his name? It's not Mel Gibson. It's the modern-day Mel Gibson. Anyway.
Oh, no. We don't need another one.
Yeah, we don't need another one.
Okay. So pre-losing his mind, he was
He was awesome, man. I can see this guy, and I can't place him. This is bad. So let's go on to our topic.
Now I'm going to be thinking about
my memories. My memory's not being reliable, but we do want to talk about Russell Crowe. That's who it was.
Russell. He's Australian? Are you sure?
Yeah, I think he has a British accent or something.
British and Australian are not the same thing.
Whatever. He's one of them.
Okay.
Long story short, we were urinating together, and I noticed he wasn't.
We were this is just getting better.
Wasn't quite the fella that, anyway, not that way, but just height wise. Anyway, so I never thought. Anyhow, back to reliability. We're going to talk about reliability today. You did a great video of a multi video series, I think you're coming out with, and that was the first topic. You know, I'll go ahead and do the intro and let you, you know, do the good stuff, but, I'll say this from a scientific perspective, right? Mm-hmm. In science, when we say something is reliable, is that we do this experiment, whatever it is, and we get the same result again and again and again. Okay? So reliability talks about the consistency, as you'll talk about in a minute. But you're getting those results again and again. It's reliable, right? Just like the Maytag washing machine. Takes forever. It starts. It finishes. It's reliable. You get the same result again and again and again. The reliability and validity are interesting arguments in science, too. We won't go too much about that, but being reliable is a very important core, principle, behavior. It's everything, man. And I'm glad you're talking about that because, you know, I know somebody you're working with and back in the day, that person was not a reliable person, even pre-law and pre-whateverness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The person would be late to their own funeral, you know?
Yeah.
And they couldn't. Anyway, not at sometimes. So I think, you know, that reliability is real important, not only in recovery, but also for all of us, particularly those of us who interact with other people, counting on other people in some sort of a business, delivering goods and services to other people, much less being in the recovery community or even being a coach, counselor, and those things. You need to be reliable. So anyway, so that's the reliable intro from this side.
Yeah, it's a foundational thing, and it's weird to me how many people, what was strange, and I still think it's odd, was when after I started getting, like, I had a real job, so I was building my career, and I was recognizing how many people, and this is outside of...
Is the car wash real, or this is...
No. A salary position, company vehicle, doing sales, like wearing real clothes, not shorts and a t-shirt to work.
All right, cool. Just check.
And outside of AA meetings, outside of the system. So we're not talking about ex-convicts. We're not talking about people in recovery. We're talking about people at work, business associates. It was odd to me how many people were late. It was odd to me how many people would not show up, would cancel meetings at the last minute, or not cancel them until the time of the meeting. And you call them and be like, hey, where are you at? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to make it. Why do you do that? Why does anybody do that? And I think if you really take a deep look at it, it's selfish. It really is, because you're assuming that your behavior doesn't affect anybody else, or that it's not important to let somebody know or to really be there because, well, they can wait for me. Says who? Who's to say they don't have something more important going on? So it was real important for me to recognize that that's a selfish act, and that if I tell someone I'm going to be there at this time, I need to be there at that time. It's just not complicated, but it seems to be very difficult for a lot of people to do. And when the basic things like that, again, you got to build on that. And when we're starting over and we're trying to earn trust and we're lobbying for opportunity, we're really trying to get ourselves in a position where people are going to give us opportunities to make more money and to have more responsibility. If you're not on time, and if you don't do what you say you're going to do, you shouldn't expect anyone to ask you to do anything else. Yeah. And I mean, I think how many times I was at the office, and when I was an operations manager, and when you're in any management position, you end up with too many things to do. It's a regular thing. And a lot of times I would have these small tasks that would just pile up. And I would just look and ask, where's so-and-so? And be like, oh, he's over there. Of course he is, because he's always here. So I would just grab him and say, hey, can you do these things for me? He'd go do them. And then I'd all of a sudden recognize, well, he's really good at that. And I had no idea. I wouldn't have asked him to do it if he wasn't there every day. If I didn't always know he was going to be there, I always knew he would be there. And I remember this guy, Jonathan, and a lot of people gave him a hard time because Jonathan's just a funny guy and his personality's, he's just Jonathan. And but he followed the rules and he got things done when I asked him to do them. And he was there every day. So Jonathan had job security like a son of a gun. Like, Jonathan was never getting fired because he was there, he did what he was asked to do, and he followed the rules. That's reliable. And I knew I could count on Jonathan. No matter how many arguments other guys got in with him because of personality stuff, it didn't matter to me. I don't care. He's here and you're not. And he gets it done and you don't. That's what people want.
Absolutely. That's exactly what people want, and you know, That's not ass kissing either. That's just being a good worker, you know, and just being there and getting it done. That's interesting. You know, that validity thing kind of creeps up when you say, if you're going to say something, do it. Or if you say you're going to do something, do what it is that you just said you were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being valid. So if a test is valid, right, in the science, if a test is valid, the test is valid if it measures what it's intended to measure, okay? So measuring your blood pressure may not be a good indication of personality, right? Yeah. Blood pressure measures blood pressure and other things. Personality is measured another way, just for example. And so anyway, it's nice when you have a guy like Jonathan, who's not only reliable, but he's kind of valid in that he gets the task validity done, right? He's a worker. Jonathan's there to work. What's his job? He's there to work and get things done. Does he get things done? That's the dependent variable. Independent variable is Neil assigns task. Dependent variable, Jonathan completes task, right? And you could kind of measure that out. It's like out of 100 tasks I gave this guy, he did, let's say, 99. Hey, this guy's A, a worker, and B, a reliable one, right? Because he gets a similar result again and again and again. So, you know, I hate to beat people down with the social science, but at some point, you know, that's what this is.
No, and statistics and stuff like that, they serve a purpose and they make sense, you know? And my sister-in-law, that's what she does, statistics. And she gave me a hard time because I think the first time I was on this show, I said something, I said, I don't care what you're intend, and I can't listen to that. 1 in 10 people recover from addiction. Apparently, I don't really care, but she gave me a hard time because I said statistics are stupid.
Hey man, I'm just saying 9 guys in front of me that didn't and 9 guys behind me that did.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. <Right. laughs>
But you know, in talking about the validity thing or doing what you say you're going to do, I think about if I go to a restaurant and they tell me how something's going to be served and it is served totally different than what they say, I'm confused. I may not necessarily be pissed off, but I'm certainly confused because you said it was going to be this way and then I paid you and then it came a different way. So I feel like I got something other than what I bought. Why did that happen? And when it comes to me working with somebody else, I don't ever want to bring someone confusion because right. They didn't ask me for that. And if I'm ever giving someone something that I said I wouldn't give them and they didn't ask for, I feel like I shouldn't do those things. I want it to be seamless. I want to just show up and then leave. And you know what I mean? I want to cause as little disruption as possible. And because, again, this video is geared towards people who have a poor track record and people who have been causing problems. So it's of the utmost importance that we do the opposite now. Want to be quiet? You want to almost not know that I'm there, but also you know that I'm there because the tasks that were my responsibility were completed. But zero disruption.
You know, and I'll throw in the re-entry piece with you a little bit because I know that's something that's near and dear to your heart after the jester visit and your friend.
When you know about this re-entry business.
Absolutely. So these guys come out of prison and my guys, federal guys, they come out of prison. Most of them are in a federal halfway house, which is good. So it's like a work release. You wake up, you go to work, you come back, you sleep, you do it again. Now, if you have to go to meetings sometimes in the evening, stuff like that, they allow for that. If you're really good, you get home confinement. Once you earn your trust at the halfway house later, you wear an ankle monitor and you serve the rest of your sentence at home. And then you come into the center once a week, piss in a cup, and pay your money to the halfway house. You have to do 20% or something in the feds, right?
Yeah.
So these guys come out, and at first they're really good. You know why? Because they're used to structure, right? And then the structure starts to kind of get a little bit less, right? And now they're at home, or now they're back in an environment. And they swore to me, man, if I can just get out, I'll never go back to this type of thinking, this and that and the other. But now, unless they're careful and they see their old friends, or they go back to their house, maybe their house was a place where they got high. You know, that's not necessarily a good thing. Going home is not necessarily a good thing for some of these folks, right?
Yeah.
And so then they go to work, and then they're worked. Well, you know what? Maybe I'll take the day off, or maybe they see what I mean. And then so it's really, you know, once they had the thumb over them in the joint, right? Or your freedom was at risk. You were on time. You were nice. You were reliable. You got your work done. But once the pressure was off, or that kind of pressure was off, they weren't so reliable. I'm not saying that happens all the time. It happens sometime. Okay. Mm-hmm. People get complacent with that, and they get complacent in their recovery as well. So you can apply this to their recovery.
Oh yeah.
Oh boy. I could go slam off on this one. Yeah, man, I'm going to go to 3 meetings a week. Blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, hey man, you had a meeting? No, man, me and the girlfriend thought we would do something. Or, oh, well, something came up. You know what I mean? Something came up, and I decided I don't really need to go to that many meetings this week. So
that's a really good example, because that happens a lot with sponsees, like if I'm sponsoring guys, and then they decide that, yeah, well, things change, you know, and they figure, well, why do I need to do that? Like, well, first off, you said you were going to.
Things change?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You said you were going to. It's like, yeah, well, I mean, it's just easier if I do it this way, and I would just rather I like it if I do. Okay. But you have to remember there was a reason you do the morning meditation in the morning. There's a reason you end the day with the conversation with your sponsor or doing the step 10 and 11. There's a reason for that. And when they move it around, when you move it to what you prefer, not thinking about the purpose, then things happen. Yeah. Because the structure thing, I like when people say that it's just not their personality. That I'm just not that type of guy. I don't like a lot of structure. I'm more artsy.
Go with the flow in the moment. You know what I'm saying? Ugh.
Yeah. If your definition of artsy is to get nothing done, then by all means, be an artiste. Let's paint your mural of disaster. It's just such a cop out, you know. Yeah. I'm not like you. I'm not clean cut. I don't like to do this. Just because I comb my hair doesn't mean you get to say that you don't want to follow a schedule. Yeah. But I don't know. I think these things are set up for me. I set these things up to protect myself from myself. From the sinful earthly human nature that I have in me that I know is there. I have to recognize that there's something deep down inside of me that says, I don't want to today. And I know I told him I'd be there, but I don't want to be there. It doesn't sound like fun anymore. Again, you have to know that it's for a purpose, right?
Well, yeah. It's not about fun anymore. For many, it's about survival. you know?
Yeah.
It's about you, like you said, you protecting you from yourself through these commitments, through this schedule, through the reliable engagement with your God, your recovery community, your sponsor, and those things. And those are the pillars, you know, those are some of the pillars to staying alive, you know, and staying free and staying sober and living in recovery. And so, yeah, these, so, you know, I love, you know, what these simple non-negotiables that you talked about, you know, and I hate saying this for myself. It just, if there wasn't some amount of pain in my life, and pain's not the right word, but we'll just, or I'll use one example. It's not pain, but I still have, you know, one kid in college with 2 years left. Okay. So that's a pain. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It is and it isn't, you know what I mean? I'm ready for it. It's fine, but you pay the bills. All right. But a pain or something that is a constant reminder to me that I can't drift too far, that I can't just whatever, you know, cash in or do nothing, or, you know what I mean? Just do nothing, you mm-hmm. know? And so, I'm almost glad for that in some ways, because it keeps me going, keeps me sharper.
Right? Do you mean the financial obligation or the financial responsibility of it keeps you in line?
I mean, partially. That's a safe example. I'm not saying, oh, because I got to do this, I'm.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to make sure I understood.
But yes, okay. That's one thing in a menu of possible others.
Yeah.
But that's a safe one to talk about. It's some sort of obligation that you have, right? You know, yeah. I mean, if you're a parent.
I've thought about that. You know, what if I won the lottery? It's actually something I'd be scared about, because I've had to work really hard, and I'm not unique to this. Anyone who's found success, I like to assume that they've worked very hard for that. I don't ever try and take that from anybody. But I think about that. And what if all of a sudden I had financial security for the rest of my life? Nothing to worry about. That would worry me, because I would just be so scared that I would fall back into these old habits. And so I wonder if, you know, God's like protected me from that in a way. That he's made it to where there, I'm not going to allow you to have any handouts. You're going to have to earn every bit of this, because he knows me so well, and I'm not even mad about it, you know?
Right.
But I think about that too. So I can relate to what you're saying. It makes sense to me.
Sure. So it's an interesting, I mean, what I would do, you know, I would be very involved in the recovery community. I would double or triple time things where I was putting my time if I had the money.
Oh yeah. I think I would.
Yeah. If I had the money, then I'd put way more of my time into recovery things, building recovery centers, funding recovery centers, donating to those charities, serving on boards. You know, I would do things to compensate for the wealth.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and I like to think I would too. I just think about all these people who said they would, and then it shows up, and then it changes them. Well, I won't say it changes them. They allow themselves to change. Mm-hmm. Nothing really makes you change. Anything is an opportunity to develop or move backwards. You know, any type of freedom opportunity is a chance for you to do good things or bad things. It's just an open door. What are you going to do with it? And so my oldest brother, Charlie, really helped me when I started getting promotions, I talked to him about it, and he said, here's what I do. Every time I get a promotion, I up the percentage of my 401k contribution, and I up the percentage that goes into savings. He's like, so, and this is where I cap out, and this is where it needs to be eventually. So every time he would get an increase in pay, it would go there and there, and he would get a little bit more to take home.
Right.
And it kept him from, or it, and I assume it still does, it keeps him from getting out of control and thinking, I'm just going to go buy some more cars. I'm going to go buy a boat, start going on trips.
Right. And
that's another thing you see with guys who have been in a lot of trouble and all of a sudden they're making some good money, especially out in the oil field in West Texas. They get some money. They buy a big old truck, some rims, some big old tires. They buy a house. I'm a homeowner now. But they set nothing aside. And so when the layoffs come, the cutbacks come, which they will come.
Especially oil.
Oh, yeah.
Oil's up and down. All right.
Yeah, and they're not ready for it.
Right. They didn't prepare for it.
Right. They wanted to live like the 30-year career oil man. But they're the 30-day oil man.
Yeah, man. I mean, absolutely. When that 2009 economy bust thing happened around 2009, 2010 or whatever, you know, I was thankful that I had practiced some good principles in my affairs, you know, in terms of saving and those things. And then retooling into having a part of my revenue come from an industry that people still have to come in for counseling. Okay.
Right.
AKA offenders on probation. So that segment kind of never stopped. And then even with COVID, that segment never stopped. And I was able to, you know, get through on those things. And that was a wise decision. And, you know, I've come to like that segment of my practice a lot. So it's not like it's, but anyway, so you make these adjustments, because it's the right thing to do, and it keeps you responsible, you know? So anyway, yeah, I mean, the folks that abdicate like parental responsibility and those things, not being a provider for their kids or families. I mean, that's an interesting thing. And look, and I know addiction, what addiction does. Okay. And I understand that. But man, that's, you know, once you're in recovery and you have the chance to re-engage in some of those roles, maybe not all the way, maybe you can't, you know, but you still can do some things with your, let's say, parental responsibilities or family responsibilities. So, and I know that with your clients, you take a look at that stuff as well, you know, mm-hmm. connected. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But yeah, I don't know. You're with anybody who's reestablishing themselves, these are those basics that you can't really argue with.
Well, being on time, man, I mean, you brought that up in your video, and that is such a big diagnostic thing. If the person is there, but if they're on time, gosh, you know what I mean? And they're on time consistently. That's probably what, 80 or 90% of the fix here, you know?
Yeah, I can't say enough about it. When someone's on time, it's almost, you're almost unique. You're almost special.
Yeah. I mean,
so many people are late these days. Yeah. And it's because we have a lot to do. And I'm not on time every single time. Things happen.
Yeah, no, I'm on.
But you call someone or you text someone, you say, hey, I'm running late. That's right. The other thing is communicate. That's going to be another thing that we talk about. Communicate. Because things can happen. And you can, because that's what they'll say. Like, well, what if I get a flat tire? Did you call somebody? No, I was fixing the tire. Okay, well, what happened before the tire blew out was you made an appointment. And before the tire blew out, you were on your way to an appointment. So when the tire blew out, you needed to look at the things that were coming before that and address that. Then you address the tire. And then you get your ass to the appointment.
Yeah, you're right. Adjust your priorities. But usually the person takes the time to be on time and is on time. Chances are they'll actually also work. Now, there are people that are on time but then sit on their tail and don't work and just collect a check. But they're on time to get the most clock time to sit on their butt to collect a check. But even today, Neil, I usually go to Taco Bell. I go into Wendy's. There's a Wendy's next to the Taco Bell. The Taco Bell opens at 9:30. They have these great breakfast crunch wraps. But they don't open till 9:30. It's 9:22. I don't have the 7 minutes to wait. Go to Wendy's. Wendy's now offers breakfast. So they have a line of biscuit sandwiches. I know. So I like the sausage biscuit. Great. I go through the window. I'd like the number 5 sausage biscuit combo. Great. What would you like to drink? Coffee. What size? Medium. Great. Go to the window. Go to the second window. Go to the second window. Guy's like, all right, man. So like, it's I have your eggs going now and I have your potatoes going now. I mean, I'm going to cook this fresh for you. And I'm thinking, shouldn't you be cooking this fresh? Like every order should be fresh. So because I'm actually doing this, can you pull up to the red line and we'll bring it right out for you? I'm like, bro, sure enough, I get the meal. 9:33. Could have gone to Taco Bell, got what I want without fail. And now my day is off to a bad start. Not really, but it's kind of fun. Like he's doing me a favor. Man, I'm actually cooking this stuff like right now. Like it's going to be fresh. Like, is everything frozen here? I mean, it's kind of funny. Yeah. I was stupefied. I'm looking at this guy like, at this point, they got you. Yeah. Either I drive off with nothing and no money, or I just sit there and take the hit and wait. So I took the hit. But anyway, fun stuff about being, if I was a manager, like, shouldn't you know that people are going to come through the window and want what's on the breakfast menu and have some things? Anyway, just, you know what I mean? I could go into the whole terror about.
And the question, this is with customer service overall. I think the question should always be, this is going to take longer. Do you have time to wait? And because nothing else matters, because the one thing I'm always thinking about with myself and others is I cannot give them more time and I can't get more time. Like it's the one thing that we don't get to duplicate, replicate, multiply. There is no fountain of youth. There are ways to stay healthy and extend your life as long as possible. But history shows that it's only getting shorter because we're feeding ourselves Taco Bell and Wendy's.
Hey, now.
But a multitude of other things, stress, screen time, all the things we're doing that are just, the point is you can't give someone more time. So if we don't respect it, I think you're setting yourself up for a negative outcome.
This is going to take a ton. And even on the Starbucks, because Starbucks customers, those people, that's some cancel culture, Starbucks Lives Matter folks. They have signs up there. They'll say, okay, due to the pandemic, which was a year ago, we're having certain shortages on certain breakfast items. So that way you kind of know you're going to get jammed up when you say, yeah, man, I like a sausage, but now we don't have that. Okay, I have the bacon cheese. No, don't have that either. Okay, well, how about the bacon gouda? No, sorry. Didn't you read the piece of paper that said that? So anyway, at least you were duly warned.
You may as well just go in there and ask, what do you have?
Yeah.
What do you got? And I actually, that happened to me last week. I went because I called my girlfriend to complain about this guy because we were talking about the state of customer service today and how poor it is. Because I remember, yes, I get to sound like an old guy. I'm excited about this. I remember when I waited tables and I delivered pizzas, dude, I was super friendly. I was outgoing. I made sure that they were satisfied with what they got. Did you get everything? Is there anything else I can do for you? Hey, how you doing? You know, all right, you have a good night. It's very simple. Just be pleasant. Just show up, be pleasant. And so I go to this place, the cookie place, Crumble, because every now and then that's what I'll do on the weekend. So I go get one of those calorie-rich cookies. And sometimes I'll get the tiny little half pint of ice cream, the cookie, together. Then that's my cheat.
Nice.
And so I go in there, go up to this guy, and he looks at me, no smile, probably 20, 21. Looks like he's hating life being there. Not my problem, dude. You're at work. I didn't put you here, but apparently it was my fault the way he was looking at me. And so he's like, what can I do for you? I said, yeah, can I please have this cookie and one of the vanilla half pints? He said, we don't have any more ice cream. I said, okay. Like, then can I have that cookie and a milk, please? And he goes, we don't have any more milk. And then he points over to where there's a vacant spot where I guess the milk used to be. I guess I was supposed to know that. And so I look where he's pointing, and I look back at him. I go, I'm sorry. I don't work here, so I don't know where the milk goes. And he just, that's when he was like, oh, okay. That's, I guess that hit him. It struck a nerve.
Oh, that's good.
It's like, dude, how am I supposed to know? I don't even remember why I'm telling this story now. I'm already back in my emotions about it.
Yeah, but, you know, and this is that unfortunate deal. Was this in West Texas or was this here?
Fort Worth, West 7th.
Oh, sorry, man. Oh, my God. Well, then let's go get the posse and string this
West
guy.
West 7th is it resembles Uptown Dallas.
So, yeah.
Fort Worth's Uptown is West 7th.
Okay. You know, I mean, never mind. I mean, you think, well, this is, you know, water seeks its own level. That's why I tell myself in those situations, water seeks its own level. Like, so basically this guy's, you know what I mean? He's here for a reason or two. And that just gives me a little bit more comfort. It doesn't get him off the hook, man. But it does give me a little bit more comfort. Like, okay, how did this person get in this position? And you think, all right, okay, listen, man, I'm going to go one extra kind step, you know. And by the way, on the Wendy's thing, I didn't say anything. I went, okay, great, I'll pull up. But my mind was like, anyway. You know, so anyway, yeah, so. But that person, you know, are they reliable? You know, and I just feel so sorry. All these businesses that need workers and they don't want to work. And,
oh, I know.
And the stimulus checks are going to run out and they're going to have to work and they're going to feel salty about working. And then everybody's salty now because if you don't pay $15 or $20 an hour and you're a small business and you can't get the workers, but then you're going to have to get by with that. And, you know, so, yeah.
Because it's gone from a privilege to get a job to, oh, my God, I have to work.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you get to work. I mean, you get to work. You get to earn a wage and make a living.
Yep.
What I think one of the keys to my success this go-round was viewing every job as an opportunity to get a better job.
That's right.
It was the stepping stone. Mm-hmm. And because I saw every job like that, I got a better job from every single one. And I gave that speech to my whole warehouse full of people. One of the last times I got to really like mentor and speak to a group of folks in the warehouse, we were having some issues with orders that were being shipped out and things were wrong. And it was happening a lot. And so the operations manager wasn't around. And so they said, Neil, could you go out there and do this training? I was like, hell yeah, I'll do it. I love it. And that was the thing I told him. I said, listen, guys, I know y'all don't like being out here. I worked this job. It's hot. And I've done this. I know exactly what you're doing and how you feel about it. However, the fact that you don't want to be doing this, should be the exact reason you do a damn good job at this, so you never have to do it again.
And you know, exactly. Man, I was working at Mr. Gaddy's Pizza. Mr. Gaddy's in the 80s, man. And that was a nice reminder that I was going to finish college. I finished college. I start working at Bennigan's. I work at a mental hospital and a detox hospital as an orderly, a nurse's aide. And we're talking back in the water with a ladle and a wooden spoon with Thorazine days type of stuff. Anyway, so, and that was a reminder, like, man, I got to go to grad school. Once I went to grad school, right, finished that. And then, man, you know, I'll take this offer over here with the feds and on, you know, but always, you know, first of all, it's a sense of pain. Like, this really sucks. I want to better myself. But then after a while, you replace that with, hey, I've already mastered this. I want to learn something new at another level. You know?
Yep.
So, and that's what I find myself doing. Like, oh, you know, oh, well, I'll be a counselor. Oh, great. Get the license. Oh, I'll be a counselor supervisor. Okay, great. Get the oh, well, then the whole sex offender treatment thing came. Okay. And then this and this and all of a sudden, well, you know what? Then I'll go to life coaching school like I did in 2014, you know, is that correct? No, 2016, because this show was born as a result of me sitting in the back of that life coaching class that you went to.
Yeah.
And making a good connection with the instructor and then birthing this show, which has been in operation since 5 years. God, dog, it's our 5-year anniversary. What a country. Anyway. Okay. But so, yeah, as long as you keep moving for whatever reason and moving forward, if not out of pain, but out of just growth, just it's something different, you know. Mm-hmm. Something different. And taking on a UFC fighter as a client. Hey, what was the issue? Could I handle it? Yes. Okay. But it's in a different wrapper. It's in a different package. It's in a different context. It's a little bit different, right, than our executive coaches and whatever, or executive clients or what have you.
It's a long way from Mr. Gaddy's.
It is. But boy, it is a long way in some ways. But I can go right back, and I'm wearing that dull brown shirt with the stripe. Man, with those bad khakis and those really, the Walmart black work shoe that you could just trudge in the dumpster.
Slip proof.
Yeah, man, with the lead foot, the iron toe, the steel toe. There we go. Woo. Anyway, but hey, you know, that's why we have our clients. We help our clients get to the next level. What's the next chapter in your life? You know, what's, instead of starting over with our guys in reentry, I say they're beginning again. They're not starting mm-hmm. over. You're beginning again, right? It's never mm-hmm. too late for a fresh start. It's never too late for a new beginning. For a lot of, some days I wake up and I feel, that's kidding. Anyway, I'm beginning again. Okay, especially something to do with exercise. That is definitely my starting over. That's a close call between starting over and beginning again on my exercise life. But that'll soon turn around. All right, we have 1 minute left. Doggone it! So. That was another fantastic episode. What can we say here? Concierge Coaches Show, LA Talk Radio. I can be found at conciergecoach.net. And Neil, where can our listeners find us otherwise?
Concierge_coaches on Instagram and the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. And you can find me at Elevated Lifestyle Academy, Instagram, Facebook, and ElevatedLifestyleAcademy.com.
Beautiful. So until then, we'll see everybody here next week. Same time, same channel on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. Have a good week.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.